Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome. It's the time of the week again when we all get together to celebrate all things cycling. I'm Phil Minot and you're listening to Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Coming up in this episode, we find out how we can help to keep others cycling in these challenging times. We chat with the councillor who has a responsibility of overseeing cycling infrastructure here in Cambridgeshire. And our guest on a bike this week is a cyclist who has had not one, but two sea cucumbers named after him. Now, for obvious reasons, we are keeping socially distanced, so I'm delighted to say, from behind their own bike sheds, today we are joined by Jimmy and Jess from Russell Street. It's a supporting housing project, and they're going to be telling us about how cycling can help individuals get on the road to independence. And Councillor Ian Bates, Chair of the Highways and Transport Committee for Cambridgeshire County Council, has joined us, and our regular, known as Mechanicking Rob, around in these parts, Rob Turner, who's one of the Outspoken Cycles in Cambridge team. Jimmy and Jess, thank you for joining us today. Now, I reckon all our listeners are going to be curious to learn about what role cycling plays in helping those in assisted living gain some sense of independence. Jess, you cycle. How do you use your bicycle and how often do you use your bicycle?
I try to use it several times a week if I can. I find it's very good exercise for myself and it helps keep a healthy mind as well.
So that's good thinking, that, Jess. Now, you're sitting there with Jimmy, who I believe is the manager of the project. Jimmy, can you describe to us the main role of Russell Street and how your residents all go about their day-to-day business? And again, you know, how you as a worker, how you see cycling as part of their everyday life?
Hi, thanks for having us on the show. So Russell Street is a project for people with learning disabilities and with autism. And we're a moving on project. And the guys here live here to gain new skills in all aspects of their life, going to college, finding work. So a lot of their day-to-day activities is around cycling. So a lot of the guys use bikes to access the community, but currently at the moment, due to social anxiety, people haven't been getting out and about as much as they would like to.
Now, I know from when we were chatting before, you obviously, and you just said, you encourage your residents to go cycling, but you did mention that bike maintenance is almost ongoing, isn't it, at Russell Street?
Yeah, that's right. We have a couple of bikes for the project, and they've been used so much that they're no longer usable. I think some of the brakes aren't working on some of them. So it would be great if some people from the local community could come and help us out by donating some spare bike parts or donating any bikes that they might have. That would be a great help for the residents here.
Now, this, I guess, is like you say, this is where Behind the Bike Shed listeners come in. Come into the picture, isn't it? Maybe someone listening might be able to help you. What sort of bits are you looking for and what sort of advice?
Well, the staff here, we aren't so savvy on the bike repairs, so it'd be great if anyone could spare any time to come to the project and talk us through the bikes and see what needs what repairs need doing. It'd be great if they could spend some time doing those repairs and working with the guys who live at Russell Street.
Now, aside from that, actually, I was just having a think while you were saying that. Now, I understand some of your colleagues really are on the front line, aren't they, at the moment from CHS Group, because they have residential homes for the elderly. And as we know, with COVID-19, that's really tough for everybody there. How has COVID-19 affected your residents?
It's affected our residents quite a lot. Because of lockdown, a lot of our residents are feeling socially isolated. A lot of them have been struggling with their mental health. So this is why bikes are really important to us, because they can access the community. And we live so close to Grantchester Meadows that they can go out and get that exercise, which is very therapeutic to them.
Jess, whereabouts do you like to go cycling when you're out and about?
I find the guided busway to be quite a nice place to go, and also out in the countryside.
And when you go cycling, is that something you can do on your own, or do you tend to go with other people, other residents?
I go on my own, but I would be more than happy to have other people come with me. It's just because we don't all have bikes here, so not everyone can come out and join us.
And Jess, when you're cycling, how does it make you feel?
It makes me feel happy and accomplished, knowing that I've done something positive on that day.
And does it? Do you like the fact that you can sort of get out and about on your own? Is that important?
Yeah, it gives me freedom and independence.
Jimmy, your colleagues who work with you, do many of them rely on bicycles to get to work at all?
Yeah, I do myself. I've recently moved to Ely, so I rely on my bike to get to the train station and then to work. I think bikes are a big part of our role because we do a lot of group activities with the residents, and one of them is going out bike riding with them. In the last year, we cycled to Reach Fair with the residents, which was great, and it'd be great to do that for next summer.
Yeah, because Rob, who's listening to you there, Rob is a great fan of the Reach Fair, and I think you've been on every Reach Fair cycle ride, haven't you, Rob?
Well, I think so, yes, and mechanicking on a lot of them. And hey, I think that there may be some tie-up we can do here. We've very kindly been donated bicycles by various businesses across Cambridge. They've named the where they'd like to use them as NHS staff who need bikes to get into town and to work. We do have some surplus, and we have some other people wanting to donate. So I wondered if perhaps we could redirect some in your direction. Wonder if that might help. I can certainly talk to some of our donors to see if they're happy to scoot them in that way. Perhaps we can talk about it afterwards, see if there's any way we can tie up.
I just played that harp for you, Rob. You're a bit of an angel, aren't you? We weren't expecting that, were we?
Other people donating. You know, we do a bit of facilitating, we do a bit of servicing, but it's people like Cambridge Golf Lakes who donate other places. So certainly we should try and tie up and find good use for these bikes.
We didn't expect that at all. Councillor, you were just trying to getting on the conversation there.
I was going to give Jimmy, hopefully he knows what I'm going to talk about. That I think just off the Huntingdon Ring Road, an organisation which has lots of people that with learning disabilities. They have a workshop there. They repair bikes. They sell bikes. They get a lot of bikes donated to them, mostly from organisations, particularly people that leave them outside the railway stations, and they're perhaps not worthy anymore, or students perhaps left. I don't know whether you're aware of that, Jimmy, but you know, they are actually the Huntingdon TAG bikes in Huntingdon, just off the Ring Road. It has people that they have a good workshop, and the people that go there on a daily type basis or once a week or whatever, they repair the bike. So are you aware of it, Jimmy? And my best suggestion is get hold of them and see if they can help you. Appreciate it's a bit further away than Cambridge, but they may be able to help. They may come out. I don't know, but talk to them maybe.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Ian. I will definitely look them up.
And don't forget the offer from Rob as well. So that's really good. And I'm going to say this for the sake of honest journalism. Honestly, I didn't know any of this was going to happen, and I don't think any of us knew this was going to happen. So it's not a bad result, Jimmy, is it, so far? You've only been on 10 minutes, so imagine what you're going to get by the end of the programme.
I know, it's like Christmas morning.
No, it's really useful. Rob, you mentioned your last time you were on, which I think was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? You mentioned the NHS bikes. Has that proved quite popular with NHS key workers?
Yes, we've had people who've had their bikes stolen and we've been able to fix them up. It's sometimes not the optimal bike for their use, but it's something that gets them going again, and people have been then handing them on. So it's sometimes been a stopgap method. It's been our people who've donated them who've really kept that going. We've just been in the middle.
Now, Councillor, you've heard Jess speak about how important cycling is for her, and we know that Jess isn't alone. There's many people who need to cycle in Cambridgeshire for many different reasons, and particularly in our built-up areas, our urban areas. Because of what's happened on the national scene, and you know the fact that cycling has been brought, people are talking about 200% more people are cycling now than they were at the beginning of lockdown. Has that now made cycling an even more major priority for you and your colleagues at Shire Hall at the County Council?
I think the simple answer to that, Phil, is yes. As we all know, when we look out of our windows at the traffic, it's a lot less than it was before lockdown. And obviously, the more people that can actually cycle to work on safely, on cycleways. Glad to see you like the guided bus, okay, route, because that's actually quite an important for people in my area who cycle regularly into Cambridge from the likes of St Ives, or in reverse. It has become, we've certainly doing a lot already. We've started to put some of the things in, what they call pop-up, so actually making space more available for cyclists and pedestrians, and perhaps less for the cars. Well, it will be less for the cars. We've started some of that work. There is more to do. It is just a note of caution. They're not permanent. They're temporary. To go through a permanent, you have to go through quite a legislative process, which obviously would delay anything. So we are introducing them. It's a long, long list. We've had a lot of support from Cambridge City, from cycling campaigns, CamCycle in particular, who've given us ideas and suggestions. And some of those will be, you can go and see them now already, but there is more to come. And I think it is an opportunity, I think, for people to rethink how they work, how they travel to work or not. If you look at, we're on Zoom, that's, I think, going to change as well. People will be doing more on Zoom and not going into their headquarters, wherever that is. So I think Cambridge already is a cycling well-known area internationally, and the government know about it as well. So I think it has got and great potentials. We're working with Greater Cambridge Partnership in some of their Greenway projects, and all that really is what I call more to come.
Now, you've all earned your appearance money, I have to say, already. We're only like a third away into the programme and we're getting stuff. We've done a few deals here already going on. What we're going to do now, I think you all deserve a break, so we're going to let you have a little break in the next part of the programme. And we're going to carry on this conversation, though, for sure, so please don't wander too far. Coming up, though, in the next bit, this is when Tony gets to say,
"It's time to meet today's guest on a bike."
And the guest on the bicycle gets to play
Spin That Wheel.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
It's time to meet today's guest on a bike.
Indeed it is, Tony. And our guest on a bike this week is British Antarctic Survey marine biogeographer Dr. Hugh Griffiths. Started off my conversation with Dr. Hugh asking him how much time each year did he spend in Antarctic.
I normally spend only up to a couple of months a year doing research in Antarctica or the Arctic. And then most of the rest of the year I'll be back in Cambridge doing work. But with having said that, this year I was supposed to be in Chile at the moment, and then we're supposed to go to Australia later. So there is a lot of travel involved, even if it's not going to cold places.
You basically look at really small things, don't you, in the ocean?
Well, some of them are really small and some of them are massive. That's the amazing thing. With Antarctic animals, I mostly study the animals that live at the bottom of the sea, so the creepy crawlies, the things that you'd think of as being small, like relatives of woodlice or sea spiders, which are tiny little crustaceans. But in Antarctica, they can actually get really big as well. So the sea spiders get the size of dinner plates, and some of the relatives of the woodlice get to the size of your hand. So what should be small in warmer water actually get really big in cold water.
So it really makes a difference. So things will grow larger in cold water rather than the warm water.
In the poles, you have more oxygen in the water. If you imagine a fizzy drink and you had a warm can of fizzy drink and a cold can of fizzy drink and you opened them at the same time, the warm one would go flat quicker. Cold liquids can hold more gases, so that means they can hold more oxygen. So simple animal body shapes like, say, insects and things only breathe through holes in their bodies. So if you have colder water, there's more oxygen, means that it's less effort to get oxygen into those simple bodies. So these crustaceans and things can get much bigger. And also things like sponges that you live in the sea, they grow slower in cold water, but end up getting much bigger. So a lot of the Antarctic ones are about 2 meters tall in some places. So some really huge animals.
Now, I was hoping you were going to tell me that you lived in a tent while you're in Antarctica, but you completely ruined it by telling me a little bit earlier again that you live in a boat, a ship.
Yeah, so I'm one of the lucky ones who gets all my hot meals prepared for me. I have a hot shower, I have my own bed to sleep in, all of those kinds. It may go up and down a lot, but compared to my colleagues who have to live in tents for months on end and have to sleep with their toothpaste in their sleeping bag to stop it freezing up before the morning and things, I get kind of easier life, although the ones who get seasick would probably argue with that. But yeah, it's a much warmer environment than some of my colleagues have to put up with anyway.
Now, we're told, like flora and fauna, the oceans of the world, we really don't know a lot about them. And there's a lot more, obviously, there's a lot more to learn. So have you ever found a species or something unusual which had never been noted before?
Yeah, the amazing thing about working in Antarctica is, compared to everywhere else in the world, where you generally lucky if you find a new species, because Antarctica is so underexplored, we can find between 10 and 20% of the creatures we pull up from the seafloor are new to science. And we find so many new species that I've had two named after me. They're not the prettiest things in the world. They're a pair of sea cucumbers. But from that one expedition, I think they found 10 or 11 new species. So they came and first asked me if they could name one after my first name, and then named one after my surname as well, because they ran out of people to name them after.
That's fantastic. I'd love to be called after sea cucumber. I think it's a sort of dining out story forever, isn't it? So, and the more serious side of your work, then what do you learn from what you're doing on a daily basis? Does it help with climate change forecasting?
So I have colleagues who do the sort of forecasting side of things, and other colleagues who will record the ongoing changes in the environment. Whereas I'm more interested in the animals and where you find them and why you find them in specific places and not in other places. So whether it's what they're eating or what temperatures they prefer or what substrate, so what the seafloor is made up of, whether it's soft or hard, like rocks or mud or something like that. And all of that has an influence. But overall, that temperature and the ice that you get in Antarctica have huge effects on these animals, like I was saying, that even on their body size and things. So their food availability and things, everything is linked to the ice. So if the ice retreats or if the water warms up, I also look at the consequences for these animals of those changes. So by understanding where they live there now, you can understand if they'll be able to live there in the future and what might go extinct from climate change.
I'm just sitting here listening to you, and it sort of suddenly dawns on me. I'm guessing that either poles, when you visit them at times, they probably can be quite lonely places, because as human beings, we're not really designed to be stuck in a tin box in one area for a very long time, are we?
So, yeah, I completely agree. And it's one of those things where you're never really alone because you're always with other people. Health and safety wise, if you're in a tent, you can't be on your own. You have to have one other person at least with you. And if you're on the ship, it's like the Big Brother house, but floating version or something, where you're all in there for a set period of time. But you're not necessarily with the people you would always choose to spend that much time with. So you've got this isolation, but with other people. And it is something that you really have to learn to adapt to, and learn that actually keeping yourself busy, having something like hobbies or something creative or listening to music and things like that to give yourself a little bit of space. But also you've got the massive advantage of, unlike this kind of lockdown situation we've all been in where we've been trapped in our own homes, the ship is moving around a lot and I can go outside and every day see a different spectacular view. I can see whales, seals, penguins. We can be followed by animals. There are albatrosses. So it's kind of like living in a nature documentary as well. So if you get bored or you get that lonely feeling, you can go outside and literally look at a whale swimming alongside the ship. So that kind of moment makes up for the missing your family and friends kind of things.
Are there any other bonuses for science and research because of the work you and your colleagues do down there, apart from obviously logging the natural environment? I'm just wondering, is there any way, sort of, does medicine or medical research receive a boost from such work?
So even just from the animals we study, there are loads of things that could benefit from it. And we're not down there to bioprospect, as they call it, because that's against the Antarctic Treaty. But if we happen to find useful things that can help humanity, so there are some fish that have natural antifreeze proteins in their blood because they live at -2 degrees centigrade, so they don't want their blood to freeze up. You've got other organisms like sponges and corals and things that are producing biochemical weapons to fight off the animals that are trying to eat them. And some of those are natural antibiotics and things. So there's loads of things like that, but also things that physics can learn from. So engineering. So you look at some of the structures of some of the shells or some of the corals and sponges, again, that build their bodies, and you can learn new things and look at how things stretch or bend and in the animals' bodies as well. So there's loads of implications for other areas of science and engineering, as well as the fact we're just learning what's there in the first place so we can help to understand it.
Changing subject completely, because obviously we're here to talk about cycling eventually, have you or a colleague you know ever cycled at either pole?
I never have. I know that on South Georgia, one of our bases on one of the islands near Antarctica, there are several bikes and they use them to cycle backwards and forwards to the old whaling station and heritage centre that's there. And I have heard of people cycling to the South Pole before, but I don't think any of my colleagues have. But the closest we've come to it is having turbo trainers, so where you can put your bike up on wheels, and exercise bikes on the ship. So I would still do my 40 minutes of cycling a day, even when I'm on the ship, just to keep it up, because I know how horrible it is if you don't do it and you come back and have to start your routine again.
Waiting there apprehensively there, just warming himself up, doing a few stretching exercises, is Hugh Griffiths, who is our biogeographer, and he has very kindly decided to stand up to the plate really and take part in Spin That Wheel. You were saying, while we were just listening to that record there, Hugh, you were saying that there is a reason why you have to cycle when you go to Antarctica.
Yeah, for me personally, I cycle every day. And so going away and having 2 or 3 months off cycling and then not doing anything at all and coming back like I did on my first trip, I really felt it for weeks after I got back. And you forget how much you need to keep up the cycling to keep the fitness and the comfort levels up.
I imagine it's a sort of problem Scott wish he had. It was the biggest problem he had while he was there. Okay, so we're now going to play Spin That Wheel. And it's quite easy, really. Just answer the questions as it comes through your head. And before we start, just going to say, I did introduce you as someone. You described yourself to me, I think, basically saying that you're not an obsessive cyclist at all. But it sounded like from your last comments, you do actually quite enjoy it.
I wouldn't say enjoy it. I'd say more of a love-hate relationship, because I get a nice environmentally friendly, pretty much free mode of transport to work and some thrown-in exercise as well. But I wouldn't say it would be my first choice for a holiday or something like that. I really wouldn't want to do that.
Okay, so here we go. We are now going to play
Spin That Wheel.
If you stand by and you shall hear the starters bleep, 1, 2, 3 of them, and then that's it. I shall give you your first question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's play Spin That Wheel.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Spin That Wheel.
What's your earliest memory of cycling?
My earliest memory of cycling was taking the stabilizers off my bike and using my parents' caravan to support me as I tried to stay upright, and scratching all the way down the side of it and getting into real trouble.
I imagine your parents took nicely to that. What type of cycling do you enjoy most?
Short distances.
And how often do you cycle?
5 or 6 days a week to work and back mostly.
Okay, what sort of bicycle or bicycles, if you have more than one, do you currently pedal? And if you have more than one, which one is your favourite?
I only have one at the moment, and it's a hybrid sort of mountain bike / city bike. So yeah, it's a basic Cambridge bike.
Okay, and while you're cycling around Cambridge, do you prefer a basket, saddlebag, pannier or rucksack? And which is your preferred for carrying stuff on your bike?
Pannier every time. I used to have a rucksack and end up getting to work with a sweaty back or coming home with a sore back. But ever since I got a pannier, I'll never go back.
What would be the perfect dream cycle ride for you? Whereabouts in the world would it be and with whom?
It would be downhill for definite.
Good choice.
Probably in some spectacular mountains, maybe somewhere like Mallorca or something like that, where they have some beautiful scenery. And it would be with my other half, Steve.
And what's the longest distance you have ever cycled?
Probably about 100 kilometres, and that was under duress.
And why was that?
Because somebody had a brilliant idea of having a fabulous day out, and I had to go along with it.
Do you prefer cycling solo or in the company of other cyclists?
Solo. I'm a bit of a critical, grumpy cyclist if people cut each other off and things like that. I'd rather have the entire road to myself, if I'm honest, and have no cars or any other users at all, because then I'd be less grumpy by the time I get to work.
Which one improvement do you think would encourage more people to enjoy cycling, especially here in Cambridge?
There were so many, but in this case, I think more obvious and consistent cycle lanes, so people can get from A to B without having to jump in out of bus lanes or on pavements or crossing busy road junctions, because it just scares too many people.
And also, carrying on that question, what do you think needs to be done to encourage more children to cycle?
When I was a kid, we did cycling in school. And we got our proficiency tests and everything done in school. And I don't know how it works in Cambridge because I don't have any kids, but I'm hoping that still goes on, because I've never been afraid of cycling, because I knew the rules before I ever got on a bike that way. And yeah, hopefully that will still go on.
And once you're on a bike, you're never off it, are you? Do you have a cycling hero at all?
Probably not, actually. I know that's a terrible answer.
No, not at all.
Anyone who sticks to the rules and doesn't cut me off is my hero.
So thank you so much, Dr. Hugh. That's a very good answer, actually. Before you go, can you tell us about a sea pig? I saw a picture of one on one of your blogs.
So sea pigs are absolutely brilliant because they're kind of pink gelatinous blob that looks a bit like a pig, but it's actually a type of sea cucumber. And they're really amazing because, unlike most sea cucumbers, which sit there and virtually do nothing, these can walk along, and they've got a little snout-like mouth that they use to hoover up mud from the bottom of the sea. And they really are fascinating. And the kids love them as well because they are like cartoon characters, basically.
Where can people go if they want to find out more about the work you and your colleagues are doing?
So you can follow me on Twitter at Griffiths_Hugh, which is H-U-W. Or you can go straight to the British Antarctic website, British Antarctic Survey website, www.bas.ac.uk.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hugh. What a great guest he was. I could chat to him all day for that. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking cycling infrastructure here in Cambridgeshire and the difficulties in installing it all in a very tight timetable.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Thanks again to Dr. Hugh Griffiths. He was such a fascinating person to chat to. Now, with me today, we still have, fortunately, I'm lucky to say, Jimmy and Jess from Russell Street, the Supported Housing Project. Councillor Ian Bates, he's Chair of Highways and Transport Committee for Cambridgeshire County Council. And Rob Turner, who is a member of the Outspoken Cycles team here in Cambridge. Rob, while you were listening to Dr. Who there chatting about Antarctica and cycling, you mentioned the fact that you have actually sent bikes to Antarctica to be cycled on.
Yes, they were there for recreation and exercise purposes. It sounds great fun, doesn't it, riding across pristine sort of Antarctic snow.
Councillor Ian, and I know you don't like being called councillor, really, do you? Much prefer Ian. The council, now you're doing the council, you've got this, I really wouldn't want the job you've got. You have to juggle with demands for all forms of road transport here into the city centre, across the whole county really, but particularly trying to get transport into Cambridge in the morning. Now, do you think it's tenable as it is at the moment, when we go back to normal times, assuming footfall and traffic flow goes back to where it was, is it going to be tenable to keep this continually flow of cars into the city? Or do you see a time when there's going to be a complete ban for cars from the centre of Cambridge?
That's a difficult question, Rob, because it is a balance, as you said. Yes, we've got cars, we've got vehicles, delivering vehicles, lorries. We've got people who want to come in and, you know, repair the fridge, etc., or take the washing machine, and people want to have deliveries. So I don't actually see. I think we've already got a cordon right in the centre where you can't take your car now. That's been in operation for many a year. Okay, so we have already got it. The questions I think come, which is, how will people change? Now that's actually, I think, the real challenge, which is actually, will people change their driving habits, or however they come in? Obviously, at the moment, it is difficult with public transport. Will people use more public transport? And I understand, obviously, at the moment that the bus operators are trying to actually make that as safe as they can. But obviously, we've gone through a very traumatic experience, and lots of people who use the buses have concessionary bus fares, passes, and therefore they may feel a bit unhappy at the moment for getting on the buses. I think it will take quite a while for it to come back to what's normal. I don't think we will go back to normal. I think it will be very different in lots of areas, and not just in the city, but also actually we're building more infrastructure. We've built Cambridge North Station. We want to do Cambridge South Station. Interesting, Jimmy uses the railway. I think more people use the railway. But again, we're back to some of the safety. So I don't actually ever think it will go back to normal, and that includes the traffic at the moment. But it is a difficult balance to have. And we have constant discussions about that with different views, which is good in democracy, is to have different views. And I get those different views. Some days I have so many views, I'm not sure I want to hear anymore at the end of the day, because I get so many views all in one day. So I think it will change, but I don't think it'll go back to the normal, if ever.
Did you welcome the intervention by the government when they suddenly threw on top of everything else, by the way, here's another $400 million towards cycling, have to have this up and running within a month, wasn't it?
I was quite grateful that it was recognised by government that it now is the time, I think would be the word I might use. And I think now is the time actually to do some investments. As I said, they're only temporary, the ones we're doing, but if they work, great. I'm also prepared, by the way, for ones that don't work, because we're doing it quickly, and therefore when you do something quickly, you don't always get it right. So I'm quite prepared to at some point maybe to say, didn't quite get it right, need to rethink that, and we will do just that, Phil. So I'm quite prepared to consider all of those, and I'm most grateful for everybody that's been contributing. But it has been a challenge for Cambridgeshire County Council with social care homes, with vulnerable children. We find the abuse has gone up when we've been in lockdown, so there's been more domestic violence than we would all wish to see. So there has been a very big impact upon the county.
So I mean, really, you know, Is there a danger, though, that because, you know, it's a high-profile thing now, cycling and infrastructure, and there is, as you've just said, there's a lot of people looking at county councils and different authorities to make sure these things are delivered correctly. Is there a danger that there's so much pressure to get things done quickly that things could end up being done in the wrong way?
Well, that's really just comes back, Phil. I'm prepared to accept the fact that we may get it wrong and we won't get it right everywhere. So I must put that thing. I've said that to the county officers. They're aware of my views. Okay. We are doing it quickly, rightly quickly as well. And my cycling champion has said it's good to see us do something quickly. That's Noel Kavanagh in the city. So good old Noel has said it's good to see what we're doing things. But I've said to him, we may get it wrong, Noel, as well. And when I say we, that's him as well. And we're not the same party. So there's a novelty for you, isn't it? Okay. So I think that's the position. And remember, we're also looking not just at that, but also about where we might close some streets. Greater Cambridge Partnership are leading on that. Also, actually, what happens in the city centre when the shops start opening in a few weeks? You know, how will that happen in the Market Square in Cambridge, in the market in St Ives, has a Monday market that will come back. So I think there's a lot more work to be done.
I'm going to carry on the conversation. Thank you so much as well, Councillor Vare. It was, I know you don't really come, it's not really what we do on this programme. We don't tend to grill politicians, but I hope it didn't feel like that for you. We like, everyone comes on here as an equal and everyone goes off air. Actually, Jimmy, sounds to me like you're going off the air today as a winner. There's been lots of, I understand there's been lots of emails and texts going on between all the different zooming bike sheds here happening, and I'm sort of out the loop. But apparently, both Rob and Ian have given you some great advice. I think Rob's, is it bicycles I heard Rob's giving away?
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you, Rob.
Well, let's see if we can help.
That's really good, and we didn't know that was going to happen, so it's great that something good's come out of this already. And isn't that the great thing about cycling, isn't it? We do tend to be that sort of community. So Jimmy, we'll let people know towards the end of the program how they can get bits and pieces to you, but if you do end up with a surplus, what would you do with them?
So CHS Group, there's many projects, not just us. There's a project in Ely called Wheatsheaf Close, who also would like some help with bikes. Also Corona House. I know Corona is not a popular name at the moment, but Corona House in Cambridge is a women's refuge, and they are also looking for some bikes as well. So they will be distributed amongst the services.
Oh, that sounds like it's going to a good cause, isn't it? Now, of course, actually, you just mentioned that because you have a project down Mill Road as well, don't you? And I do remember meeting, chatting to some of the young residents there. And they're male, and to them, a bicycle was so important. It was almost like a rite of passage for them. And I guess because the guys who were living there had been through such a, you know, a hard route in life to get there, bicycles really were independent. Jess, does having a bicycle make you feel independent?
Yes, definitely.
And do you know your friends who are working? Because some of your residents work, don't they, Jimmy?
Sorry, say that again.
Do some of your residents go to work, Jimmy?
Yeah, a lot of our residents work and go to college. So they rely on bikes, especially for CRC, which is across town. A lot of our residents get anxious about using public transport and would rather have that independence to cycle to college. It comes with the added...
Sorry. Yeah, sorry, I had a Zoom cross rumbling there happening, didn't we?
It's a bit glitchy.
Yeah. So Jess, you would rather cycle on the road than go on public transport, would you, to get around Cambridge?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's just a nice way to get around, really.
And that's quite a good thing to hear, isn't it, Councillor? Because it means, you know, we all moan about travelling on the roads and cycling around Cambridge, but the fact that it is still one of the best places in the UK to cycle around.
Yeah, absolutely right, Phil. But there's added benefits fresh air. Also the physical side, it's good for the mental health and well-being of people. So I think there's lots of other benefits apart from the obvious ones of taking some exercise, and therefore, you know, if you need to lose a pound or two, it's a good way of doing it, particularly when there's less traffic on the road, with less pollution on the road area, with air pollution. I think there's lots of other advantages which don't always come across, I don't think, particularly well, but there are lots of added benefits to cycling throughout the county, and particularly in Cambridge.
Yes, in individuals and businesses as well. You know, of course, locally in Cambridge, your local plumber, electrician, all these people can get around by cargo bike perhaps much more easily and with more social awareness than in a van. So, yeah, for the individual, for the business, it can all help.
And I guess, Rob, that's the thing, isn't it? Have you seen more a different sort of person wanting to take up cycling since lockdown started?
Yes, a lot of it, as everyone's mentioned, is the desire to keep away from public transport. So there's that for the individual. But businesses are seeing it as a real viable alternative, you know, as a cheaper, faster, greener, cleaner way of working. So yes, I think this whole thing has highlighted the issues that surround us at the moment, and cycling is certainly one of the solutions.
Jimmy, if people listening would like to get stuff to you, how do they contact you?
So the best way to get in touch with CHS Group is to visit our website, which is chsgroup.org.uk, and there'll be lots of information there for you.
Okay, and we put something on the Behind the Bike Shed Facebook page, which you can find. It's Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio Facebook page, and you can find that at btbsc105. You can email us as well if you want the program at bikeshed@cambridge105.co.uk. Well, can you believe it? We've run out of time again. So as my guests all sprint off into the distance, I just see the finishing line fast approaching. I want to thank them, particularly to Jimmy and Jess and Councillor Ian Bates, Rob, our mechanicking Rob on a bike as always, and our guest on a bike, Doctor Who Griffiths. Thank you all so much for taking part in today's programme. As I said, if you'd like to contact the programme, we would love to hear from you. Email address again is bikeshed@cambridge105.co.uk. Next week, alongside all the latest cycling news, we already have a couple of guests booked up for you. We have a brilliant Spin That Wheel guest again, another mystery one for you. So it just leaves me to say you've been listening to Behind the Bike Shed, a Barking Hound production for Cambridge 105 Radio. The voice of Spin That Wheel was Tony Barnfield.
Spin That Wheel.
I'm Phil Minot, and until next time, safe cycling. Bye.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Just to let you know, you can sponsor this programme on Cambridge 105 Radio. Email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.